From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Imagine being a teenager faced with a devastating choice. Either be drafted by the government trying to wrest control of your home or flee.
I had enough understanding and knowledge of the Eritrean and Ethiopian politics that I adamantly opposed the notion that I would join the Ethiopian army.
For Dawit Gebremichael Habte, the only choice was to escape. So he left Eritrea and embarked on a months-long journey, hiring a human smuggler to guide the way. Eventually, he resettled in Maryland and focused his efforts on his education, attending Johns Hopkins University with the goal of returning to help those he left behind. He shares his journey in his new memoir, Gratitude in Low Voices, on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Fly from Eritrea to Ethiopia. Hire a human smuggler. Trek through the jungle, cross the Kenyan border on foot, hide from police in a graveyard. Dawit Gebremichael Habte's two-month-long escape from war-torn Eritrea ended in a huge dark jail cell in Kenya, where the group he traveled with waited to plead for political asylum. Eventually, Dawit resettled as a refugee in the United States. He attended high school in Silver Spring and went on to Johns Hopkins University. And now he's written a book called Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir. It comes out tomorrow. The memoir weaves together the history of the Eritrean-Ethiopian conflict with his own personal story of leaving his country and building a life in the United States. Dawit Gebremichael Habte, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Sheila.
Eritrea is on the eastern coast of Africa along the Red Sea. The region was conquered by the Ottoman Empire in the 16th century. In the late 19th century, Eritrea was colonized by Italy, and during World War II, Italy was driven out by the U.S. and Allied forces. This gave way to a long-lasting struggle between Eritrea and Ethiopia. Dawit, describe the impact of that conflict on Eritrea.
Simply to describe it, it would be one of the worst tragedies that took place in the continent of Africa. The human cost alone, it costed 500,000, which is roughly 25% of Eritreans, to leave their home and to be refugees all over the world. The death row, both to Ethiopians and Eritreans, is just unimaginable.
And given that tragedy, what has been the reaction of Eritrean people?
Steadfastness, determined to be free, to be independent, and to basically determine their future and their future generations' future on their own. Independence was one thing that Eritreans truly believed in 3-4 generations ago, and the struggle lasted 3-4 generations just to attain independence.
You write that, quote, there are few countries in Africa and the Third World that can rival the attention that Ethiopia received from Europe and the United States, close quote. What do you mean by that?
The Ethiopian successive administrators and governments had been the highest political, financial, and moral aid recipients from European countries and from the United States because they set themselves to be basically client states. And considering the amount of UN organizations and embassies in Ethiopia, there was no other African nation that received attention as much as Ethiopia did over the past 100 years.
And so what did that mean for Eritrea?
The exact opposite, in that the suffering increased, the aid that was provided to Ethiopia in the form of food aid and monetary aid to fight hunger and starvation was instead used to purchase armaments and bombs that were used to attack Eritreans and basically to burn Eritrean villages for more than 30 years.
I want to turn to your personal story, but first, what does gratitude in low voices mean?
If it's not in low voices, the next step is moment of silence. And the reason why we give moment of silence to those who paid their precious life for their own society, for its defense and for the continuity of the society is because the power of silence is just too much. It's so powerful, and next to it is in low voices. It comes from the expression that I observed from my mother when she was giving praise to God, to her, and to his disciples. I saw some tears in her eyes, but I could not hear the voice. It was too low for me to hear it. And what I observed from that is the amount of love and compassion that you see in these unspoken words is just powerful.
So we communicate more in low voices than when we shout.
Yes.
You write that your exact birth date is the subject of some debate in your family, but that your name was very carefully chosen. Tell us about your name.
My name, Dawit, was actually given to me by my great-great-grandmother, my father's grandmother, who passed away at the age of 110 plus.
Wow.
And she was extremely devoted, Orthodox Christian. She did not know how to read or write, but she memorized the Psalms. And to her, King David was this ultimate success in life. Even though I'm sure she knew some of his shortcomings, she still believed he was the ultimate success in life, and she wanted her great-great-grandson to be the positive side of King David.
So that's your first name, Dawit.
Yes.
Which is a version of David.
Correct.
Your middle name is Gebre Michael.
Yes. In the Eritrean tradition, the names are given in such a way that I inherit my father's name as my middle name, my great-grandfather's first name as my last name, and the name continues that way. So Hapte is actually a short for Hapte Endrias. Hapte Endrias meaning the world of Endrias, meaning the world of one of the disciples of Jesus.
Your name is something that you have always held close. You write about a few times when people have tried to change your name from Dawit to David, and you've stopped them.
Yes.
Why?
First, I grew up hearing that the value my great-grandmother gave to my name. Second, in Eritrea, a name is associated with a reputation. For example, if your father, your grandfather, your grandmother, one of your ancestors' name is associated with something negative, that negative image takes significant amount of effort to get rid of. So name is extremely, extremely highly held in the Eritrean tradition.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Dawit Gebre Michael Habte, author of Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir to be released tomorrow. In 1989, you, one of your sisters, and your brother's fiancé embarked on a journey from Eritrea and across Ethiopia to illegally cross the border into Kenya and seek political asylum. You were 15 years old. What prompted you to leave Eritrea?
In that year, actually 87, 88, 89, house-to-house search by Ethiopian military personnel by the army had become part of our daily life. And by the time I finished my ninth grade, which I was going from 14 to 15, I was actually drafted to join the Ethiopian army. And I was not willing. I was against the cause of the Ethiopians' aggression and annexation of Eritrea. By that time, I had enough understanding and knowledge of the Eritrean and Ethiopian politics that I adamantly opposed the notion that I would join the Ethiopian army.
After 5 months in Kenya, your older brother Afewerki sponsored you, your sister, and his fiancée to come to the U.S. Why had Afewerki left?
For the same reason. couple of years before, he was actually drafted and he was able to escape with the help of family members, including my uncle, who was able to get him out of Eritrea through Ethiopia to Egypt. And then eventually he was sponsored by a church in Bethesda, ambassadors of the Presbyterian, Fourth Presbyterian Church, and he came to Maryland.
So how did you envision the United States in your mind before you came here?
To be very frank, I did not have this good vision. I grew up watching a great deal of movies, especially African-American acted movies, including Hell Up in Harlem and others that were made in the early 80s, late 70s. And I knew it was going to be a challenge. But one thing that I realized by the time I got to Nairobi was CNN started airing at that time. It was a half an hour program, and I kept listening to that news because the Aboy Araya, the man that we were living with, used to ask me to translate for him. And I appeared to be getting a little different perception or impression of the United States from the continuous advertisement that I was watching on CNN.
And we're going to talk more in the second part of the show about your life here in the U.S. But first impression, when you actually got here, what sticks in your memory that surprised you most?
The library at Springbrook High School.
The library?
At Springbrook High School. The abundance of books, to me, was mind-boggling. And to me, that much access to books was completely changed my mind. By the way, to step back, the knowledge, the fact that I had a mindset that my life might not be easy coming to the United States, actually helped me significantly. Once I got in, I was able to adapt in terms of working, juggling between jobs and school. Was something that I mentally was prepared. So it made life easier. I am kind of happy that I am glad the impression that I got from CNN when I was in Kenya, that the life of these beautiful buildings and hotels and resorts, I'm glad those were not the image that I grew up with of the United States.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. Lots more to talk about with Baltimore author Dawit Gebremichael Habte about his memoir of fleeing his home country of Eritrea and seeking asylum in the United States. His memoir is titled Gratitude in Low Voices. I'm Sheila Kast. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. We're talking today with Baltimore author and Johns Hopkins alum Dawit Gebremichael Habte about his memoir, Gratitude in Low Voices. His book, on sale tomorrow, tells of escaping war-torn Eritrea to seek asylum in the United States, graduating from Johns Hopkins University, and returning to his home as an adult. When you came to the United States as a teenager, and that was when?
December 1st, 1990.
When did you expect to return to Eritrea?
The best part of my life, the first 6-7 years in the United States, was that education was the only thing that I saw between me and returning, going back to Eritrea. That was the only thing in my way. So my schedule was basically when I was going to be done with school. Once I was done with school, I was ready to go back.
One of your teachers, whose family was from Hungary, cautioned that you might not realize how much things were going to change while you were in the U.S. True?
Absolutely true. She was accurate. The only difference was that I always continued the connection with family and friends. Since that connection was not disrupted, my integration with the society once I went back became extremely easy. Otherwise, she was on the mark.
But along the way, you decided to build a life in the U.S.
Yes.
Because?
Once I went back to Eritrea, I was welcomed by another war between Eritrea and Ethiopia. The idea that I had using IT to improve the economy of the nation and to train as many Eritreans as possible so that they can get integrated with the global industry waned through the air after the devastating war that was actually considered by Eritreans as an Ethiopian intent to reverse Eritrea's independence.
I've sort of gotten ahead of the story. You graduated from Johns Hopkins University with a degree in biophysics and a passion for software development.
Yes.
And you graduated when?
I graduated in 1997.
And you got a job with Bloomberg, the software and media company based in New York City, and that led you to present a plan to Michael Bloomberg.
Correct.
Proposing a company that would train software developers in Eritrea and offer the Eritrean government IT services.
Yes. Exactly a year after I worked with Bloomberg, I gave him the proposal, and thanks to him, he was willing to support me. So in August 1999, I went back, 2 years after I graduated from Hopkins.
And the country was just too war-torn.
Yeah, it was. Actually, I could hear the heavy gun missions. The front line became close to the capital city. It was merely 30 miles away to where I consider to be home.
That's Dawit Gebremichael Habte here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. His memoir, Gratitude in Low Voices, is to be published tomorrow. You write about how difficult it is to be a first-generation immigrant. You had to balance school and work. You almost didn't apply to Hopkins because you couldn't afford the application fee. Right now in the U.S., there is an atmosphere of anti-immigrant and anti-refugee sentiment. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't know if I would state that there is anti-immigrant sentiment in the United States. I think it's extremely smaller sector of the society, which at times might be in power, but the United States is represented by its communities, by its churches, by its PTAs, its civic associations. And I don't believe there's any anti-immigrants or anti-refugee sentiments in those institutions. But those with heavy microphone, might have that sentiment, which is unfortunate. It's an American, as far as I'm concerned, based on my interaction, based on the communities, based on the individuals I interact.
There's no anti-immigrant sentiment?
At a people level, I do not believe there is anti-immigrant sentiment.
Why do you believe that so strongly? Can you tell me something that happened to you that makes you so sure of that?
The church that sponsored me, the Christian church, they also sponsored Muslims. They are continuously supporting new immigrants. They are still continuously trying to do whatever they can to support not only immigrants here, even send money abroad to support people who they believe are in disadvantage. As far as I could tell, based on my experience, Americans are the most philanthropic and the most helpful people that I know of. And to me, that is not a switch you turn it on or off, as you see. It is an integral part of the society.
At the beginning of this interview, when I asked you about the impact of the war on Eritrea, your description reminded me of what people are describing today in Syria, in the refugee situation. And I'm wondering whether you think there were lessons that the world failed to learn in the Eritrean situation that we could be applying now.
There are many lessons if the world failed to learn, even from Eritrea, that the world is repeating at the moment in Eritrea.
Explain that.
We live in a world where there is a single superpower. Whether we admit it or not, since 1945, at the end of World War II, the only superpower in this world is the United States. And when you are a superpower, you are expected to be even-handed. You are expected to be just, fair, especially when issues, interstate issues between two nations are sent to a court, those issues, the superpower is expected to enforce those rulings. In the case of Eritrea, Ethiopia, they fought 30 years of armed struggle. Eritrea gained its independence. They fought another border war, and both countries decided to go to court in The Hague with the guarantee of the United States. That ruling is still on paper, but Ethiopia refused to accept it, and the U.S. is not doing anything. And both the Ethiopians and Eritreans have been looking for peace for many, many, many years. And for some reason, they are not able to find it. But I believe a stroke of pen in the White House can bring peace between Eritrea and Ethiopia by lifting the sanctions against Eritrea and by forcing Ethiopia to vacate from the places that it's holding, Eritrean places that it's occupying. After that, both countries can sit down and decide how they could live in peace with each other. Back to the Syria. The biggest lesson we could learn from immigrants in the case of Syria is the victims of this war are the kids, the children, the mothers, and the elders. And the only thing, once they leave home, refugees, the only thing they have is hope. They live in hope. They don't have enough food. They don't have enough drinks. They have no decent place to sleep. But they still move on in the hope that they will reach their destination. If their destination is set to be the United States, that hope is what keeps them moving. And anything that we do against that type of, against those people, against the refugees, is tantamount to cutting a rope that they are holding to and letting them fall in a free fall.
In your book, you profile many people who mentored you or helped you, a friend who helped you gain access to the library, your high school guidance counselor. Why was it so important to include their personal stories in your memoir?
Why do people behave the way they do? We have to look into their past. And I saw a lot of similarities that has nothing to do with race, has nothing to do with religion, has nothing to do with culture, has nothing to do with anything. Experience. I saw a lot of similarities. And to me, again, I felt that might give some idea to the reader that our daily interactions with each other, the impact, the positive impact on each other is so huge, and having an understanding of the background of the individuals and how different it is from each other. And yet, our paths crossed, and for some reason, I was the most fortunate one to gain out of that interaction. And I want to let the reader know that just putting their name might not be sufficient. Let me give some context, because in life, context matters.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much, especially for having me here.
Well, thank you for coming in to tell us about it. Johns Hopkins alum Dawit Gebremichael Habte, an immigrant from Eritrea, is the author of Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir. It's to be published tomorrow. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening. Tune in again tomorrow.